When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve.
Hello, I'm Midwife Pip and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of honest expert chat. My mission is to provide you with the very best support and information through pregnancy, birth, and beyond with my online courses over at midwifepip.com. And as a podcast listener, I'm also offering you an exclusive 15% off all my online courses using code PODCAST15. With no further ado, let's get chatting. Pregnancy is an incredibly precious time, but along with this often comes a sense of uncertainty, perhaps a little vulnerability and anxiety. A degree of anxiety is expected. However, for some women, this becomes troublesome and requires some help and intervention to improve things. It's thought that around 1 in 10 women experience anxiety during their pregnancy, so you are most definitely not alone if you are feeling this way. And this week's guest is here to explain the whys, whats, and hows behind perinatal anxiety. Now, I've got so much pressure to pronounce your name correctly. We got Dr. Jorge Palacios. Is that right? Was that anywhere near close?
In some of the practices, you did better.
I did better. So. Oh. It's my Spanish accent. It's just not optimal, is it? I really need to go on holiday.
Don't worry. It's not easy. Exactly. You need to start ordering some tapas soon somewhere.
Yeah. I can do. But you are a senior digital scientist and researcher at Silver Cloud Health, the mental health platform offering scalable solutions to suit the needs of all its users. And Silver Cloud Health is the NHS's prime provider of digital therapy using internet-based cognitive behavioral therapy to deliver a range of programs across the mental health spectrum. Silver Cloud Health have a specific space for perinatal well-being programs to help individuals better manage their mental health during the perinatal period. And as a leader in the field of digital mental health, you are obviously committed to providing this accessible and evidence-based mental health solutions to all who need it. And with a special interest in maternal mental health, you are the perfect person to come and chat to us today. So thank you so much for your time and massive apologies for my Spanish.
No worries. I'll pronounce my name correctly to make you look bad.
Go for it.
Jorge Palacios.
But see, it's now everyone knows why I struggled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just gave you the benefit of the doubt there. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining me. And I want to just first of all unpick what led you specifically to have an interest in not just mental health, but specifically the perinatal period, because there's obviously a massive scope of mental health that you could have gone into. But perinatal, why was that?
Well, first let me just say, Pip, that I just want to thank you for your profession. This is a good chance for me to personally appreciate what midwives do and the value that they have for just society in general. But for me recently, because I just became a father a year and a half ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. But got some firsthand experience about how valuable midwives are. I mean, I don't know what we would have done without you guys. Obviously, in a pandemic, it was really hard. There was a lot of anxiety experienced by me and my partner. So, thanks to you guys, yeah, we pulled through, and we're the happy parents of a 1.5 monster gremlin, but beautiful boy. So I just wanted to say that. But as of my own interests, so I studied medicine, right? And I do have some genetic lineage, mental health wise, as well as medical. So my grandfather, my father, uncle, brother, and I have aunts and cousins who are either doctors or psychologists or psychiatrists. Oh. So there was kind of no getting away from that. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't get away. I tried to. I studied engineering and applied maths before medicine because I thought I was going to be the outlier, but no, they pulled me in. So I did medicine first, and then I was always interested in that. In essentially the mental aspect of physical health. I always believed and obviously continue to believe strongly that physical and mental health are intertwined and they're inescapable from each other. A lot of my work and my background, my research has been in conditions that are really linked to mental health, like heart disease or diabetes, you know, like long-term conditions where inevitably mental health plays a role. I started at SilverCloud 5 years ago, I did my PhD at King's College London, and then jumped into industry where, you know, I'm proud that, you know, this is a place in my company that believes strongly in evidence-based and research, you know, leading to the solutions that we have on offer, because that means a lot of people benefit from, you know, solutions and products which have evidence to back them up, right? Mm-hmm. But this is across the spectrum of mental health. With regard to perinatal, like I said, you know, there's a lot of things about physical mental health that are intertwined. I again recently became a father, so it's, you know, something that's personally I believe strongly in. But also because of the time that we're going through collectively, as a society, and things like this becoming even more stressful, or, you know, new, you know, I guess before the pandemic, there were other things that, you know, we took for granted, you know, when it came to the perinatal period. For example, just, you know, I don't want to veer off track too much, but pregnancy, we get a lot of our knowledge around pregnancy from what we see on TV and film, right? And when we build up this expectation for how perfect it is, and all of these moments where, you know, the parents are holding hands, looking at that first ultrasound, and, you know, all of that stuff. And for us, it wasn't like that. I mean, the first ultrasound that we went to, I couldn't even be in the hospital. And that was incredibly stressful for my partner. You know, she, you know, begged them and asked them so I could go in. But, like, you know, fair enough. The rules at the time were such that I had to wait outside. And so I couldn't be there to listen to that heartbeat, you know, to hold my partner's hand. Even thinking about it now, like, just gives me, you know, a bit of sadness. And we didn't experience all that. We couldn't tell our family members face to face, you know, how excited we were, right? Like, it was all on video conferencing. So there's a lot of unique things about the last 2 years that have made that period even more stressful. So I think it's both a professional and a personal level about why I think why I'm passionate about it, and why I'm, you know, taking this opportunity to speak to you, and really embraced the fact that you were kind enough to invite us on. So, yeah, That's the reason.
Yeah, I love what you just said. A couple of things that just really resonated with me. First of all, how you talk about the mental and physical health being so intertwined. And I think it really is about time we started recognizing that more and stop thinking that, you know, we can work so hard on our physical health because we see it externally more and ignore our mental health. And I think that happens too much. And I think that happens even more when we think about pregnancy and possibly even the postpartum and parenthood, because you've got this other being that is very all consuming and wonderful, but really, really tough. And we then start to just neglect, I think, and bury our mental well-being more and more. And I'd love what you say. We just can't consider them separately, can we? They are completely interrelated, and what we do with one totally interplays with the other. And I think that's a really valid point just to emphasize for anyone listening who perhaps has got a massive focus on one and neglecting the other because it just doesn't work. We need that balance. And then I totally feel what you said about that first ultrasound, because actually I had the exact same experience with my husband. So we've got an 8-month-old. So by the time we got to birth, things were all a little bit looser and less restricted. But my first scan was the same scenario as you. I had to go in on your own. And I will, I think, forever be cross at the NHS for those kind of rules, because I could not, I still cannot understand the rationale. I just don't get it. Yeah. It makes no sense to me. And I think the impact that's had on so many families is honestly unforgivable. And I know there'll be so many people listening that went through that same stress and that same anxiety around the lack of support. And I often think, you know, and this is probably an interesting context speaking to yourself as a male, that if it was a men's health service, would that have been the same? And we'll never know the answer, but it's just interesting that when hospitals were all kind of reconfigured to allow for COVID, pretty much in most hospitals, the ward that was moved was the gynae ward, like a women's only ward. And I don't want to sound like a really crazy feminist here, but I just think it's a really interesting thing, you know?
I agree with you. I agree with you, Pip. And it's something that my partner like shouted about to anyone who would listen. And I've supported her so much on that reason, because even like when our baby was born, when Julian was born, they had to stay in hospital for 7 days and I could only see them for 2 hours at a time. But, you know, she was in this ward with 6 other women and the husbands were also allowed to come in only 2 hours. And we thought, like, that's crazy, because, I mean, we're all in this space anyway in those 2 hours. And, you know, like, we're going outside and coming back in. So why 2 hours? Like, that? I think that hasn't really been thought through. And look, to be fair, I don't think, I mean, like a crazy feminist, but I don't think that actually exists. I think you have all the reason. And my partner used to say, I bet these rules were made by you know, guys somewhere and didn't take into account, like, you know, the women actually experiencing this, because it was incredibly stressful. And I don't think that the consideration of how important mental health is in this period was considered that much. It was all, you know, safety and COVID and all of the physical stuff again. And unfortunately, mental health has lagged always in that regard. And even if you look at research around perinatal anxiety, it's acknowledged that the problem is there's a lot of lack of information, because it, you know, it's just been neglected. Even, I mean, I bet most of the women that you've seen as a midwife, they know what postnatal depression is, but how many really understand what perinatal anxiety is, even though it's super common? And in fact, research, systematic reviews published in the last few years have determined that it's either actually around 15% to 25% of women who experience some level of anxiety in this period. So it is absolutely normal, absolutely normal. And you've got to be able to watch out for it, watch out for those signs. But it's tough when society itself isn't acknowledging it enough, you know? So my partner was there for 7 days because Julian had a little bit of jaundice, essentially. And, you know, they were incredibly good at checking, you know, exactly what the level is and blah, blah, but what was being done to handle the mental health aspect of it? Like, I would see her 2 hours leave, and she would cry. I would like be on the verge as well, cry when I got home sometimes. Like, it was tough, you know, but where are the resources around that? So, you know, I think it's definitely important to start to have conversations, because there are resources out there, and I know we'll talk about that, but even just having conversations in podcasts like yours, which a lot of people listen to. So hopefully more and more women will go, yeah, I mean, this happened to me. The next time I talk about it, or to soon to be mother, or someone who's just become pregnant, let's talk about this early on, so that if she feels that she needs to reach out about this, that it's just as normal as how bloated they feel, or, you know, laughing about, you know, what foods that they suddenly wanted to eat, or whatever. It's the same. It's part of the whole conversation.
We are just taking a mini pause from this episode to share with you an extra expert top tip from Avril, one of ACTA Club's expert authors.
Hi, I'm Avril Flynn, a midwife and childbirth educator. Did you know many new mums worry that their baby is not getting enough milk? But in the first few days, your newborn will only need a tiny few teaspoons of colostrum a day, as their tummy is about the size of a small marble. For more information, sign up to aptaclub.co.uk.
Yeah, so important. And just the thought of your wife there on the postnatal ward, seven days, like, that's hard on its own. Like, take out global pandemic, yeah, take out the absence of you. That's mentally tough, right? Then add in all of that. It's just, and what I think is really concerning is it wasn't so many years ago that mental health was our leading cause of maternal mortality. And yet we haven't fixed it, have we? Like, it's obviously still something that needs so much focus.
For sure.
But stripping back to anxiety, what actually, for anyone listening who kind of, we've all heard the term anxiety for sure, but we maybe don't really understand what it is. Would you mind just kind of recapping what actually anxiety is?
Yeah, sure. So, anxiety, I mean, I've always preached about this when I've given lectures and taught it to people, but anxiety, just like depression, in the end are a series of symptoms. I mean, they're an accumulation of symptoms that mean different things to different people. But so it's really the easiest way to talk about what anxiety is to talk about the signs around anxiety, right? And people listening will probably go, oh yeah, this, I feel that. So obviously it's a feeling tense or unable to relax, or, you know, having fears of the worst case scenario happening, or even like, you know, feeling that the world is kind of speeding up or slowing down, constant worrying, fearing that others might be disappointed in you, even, you know, the vicious cycle about worrying about being worried, you know, or thinking about a bad experience over and over again. More extreme examples are depersonalization, so feeling disconnected from your mind and body. And, you know, even listing these things, like, I think everyone would have felt this at some point, right, in their lives. You know, there's, as you said, everyone knows what anxiety is because people talk about it and sometimes gloss over it too much. But there's also some somatic symptoms. So, you know, things that we can actually point to or measure, which is, you know, this feeling of butterflies in your stomach or lightheadedness or sleep disturbances are very common, panic attacks, changes in your sex drive, nausea, things like that, right? So anxiety encompasses a lot of things. One thing to say is that the difficulty is that a lot of these could also be part of, you know, being pregnant, right? The last two, sex drive, nausea. I mean, that could happen to 90% of women who are pregnant.
Sleepless nights.
So the trick is... Yeah, sleepless nights, come on. Especially, and I know that,
we both feel that.
Later. Yeah, of course. So it's about knowing, you know, when these accumulate and add up, and then they become overbearing, overwhelming, things like that. But that is essentially, that's anxiety. And then perinatal anxiety would be having these feelings around being pregnant or having a child. Now, you may hear the term prenatal or postnatal, which is, you know, as everybody knows, you know, before and after the birth. But perinatal means anxiety from pregnancy to around a year after your child is born. But, you know, it's anxiety in the end. So those feelings, as they allude to your child and your pregnancy, you know.
Yeah, and I think, like, definitely a lot of the symptoms that you have just mentioned there completely resonate with me, who I'm very much still in the perinatal period. And to some extent, I feel like I'm not surprised by that, because in pregnancy, I think as women, you feel this immense pressure because you are the only one that can influence the health of your baby at that point. You know, your abdomen, unfortunately, is not see-through. No one else can see what's going on. It's a massive pressure on your shoulders for this incredibly precious, precious life. And I remember when I was about 27 weeks pregnant with my little boy, caring for a couple who had tragically lost their baby at 27 weeks, and they also had a little boy. And I was doing all of his casts and footprints, and that gave me a humongous amount of anxiety because it just felt so close to home. And it took me a good few weeks, I think, to really try and distance myself from that situation, because it did just feel too close. And usually I'm pretty good when I'm at work. Throughout my pregnancy, I was very much in my uniform, midwife headspace, and I could really dissociate. But I remember at that time thinking, actually, this now feels quite difficult. And I think, you know, those hormonal changes, that maternal instinct in pregnancy is just something else, isn't it? And in that way, it's no surprise it predisposes us to anxiety. Why do you think, from the work you've done and the research you've done and the families you've worked with, why do you think it's so common in pregnancy? Is it that immense pressure and that precious nature of growing a child?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think I can say it better than what you just said. I mean, I'd add that, becoming a parent obviously comes with all of this responsibility, but just everything that you before perhaps caused you stress now resonates even more as a parent. Like, let's talk about the biggest sources of stresses I've seen in surveys recently are obviously the war in Ukraine, the pandemic, you know, these events happening in the news. And it could be the school shooting recently in Texas. Like, when you see that as a parent, that just, like, the stress that you felt before goes into overdrive. So, you know, the war in Ukraine hit me really hard when I listened to families being affected.
It's almost like, instead of hearing it, you feel it, don't you, once you're a parent?
Yes,
you actually, you
totally,
feel that
totally.
Pain, you feel that absolute fear that must have gone through those families, rather than just hearing it and thinking, oh, like, obviously that's really sad. But I just think you feel it differently. It hits you differently.
Exactly. You feel it, but like you said, with a sense of responsibility, that, you know, you are responsible, you know, from anything like this happening to, you know, to your own child, right? So, and on that, let me share briefly a story. Just the other day, we were at the playground and we were talking to a mother, and her daughter was on one of the apparatuses, and she fell about 2 meters really badly. And you know, we were nearby, rushed over, and the child kind of lost consciousness for a little bit. We called an ambulance, and, you know, the mother was very, very stressed. Fortunately, you know, the child came back and was okay in the end. But like, I just keep thinking about how that could happen to my brain. And it's an accident, right? So imagine, you know, the worst case scenario and things like that. Like, we all think, what if that happens to me? And so this is us normalizing it, because we as parents can attest to it. But you have to, so there's all this pressure to deal with it, right? Because it's part of what's expected of you. And also the pressure to not disclose it, because it's meant to be this wonderful thing, you know, pregnancy and being a parent. Society is still, you know, expecting you to, you know, talk about how amazing it is. And, you know, other people, obviously the stuff we put out on social media is mostly amazing things. Like, I mean, I'm not putting up pictures of my boy when he's like sick and, you know, or just thrown up. Like, I don't want to do that, right?
It's, and your reaction isn't to grab your phone when he's just been sick.
Yeah, of course. No. Of course, yes, thank you. Obviously not, imagine. So yeah, I mean, there's expectations, there's pressures, and everything all rolled into one. And it's also such an important time that will resonate, you know, for years and years down the line, and also will resonate with our children. So, you know, they can feel it. You know, perinatal anxiety is actually tied to things like development issues, or with the child, feeding difficulties, bonding issues. Like, that's been researched as well. So that's why it's key to look into it as well. And that's why it can be so common during pregnancy, right? So yeah, hugely important.
So I think we know, most people probably will be now thinking, oh yeah, I've had a bit of anxiety about a circumstance, or just generalized. When do we kind of cross this line, I suppose? Because I feel like, just chatting to you, there's kind of this line where we've got normal anxiety, yeah, because it's a stressful time and everything's new and your world's about to change forever. And then you've got anxiety where you can't leave the house, or, you know, it's really, yeah, really an issue. Is there like a line that we cross? Is there normal and abnormal anxiety in the perinatal period? What are your thoughts? We're just taking a quick pause from this episode so that I can share with you a brand that I know you're going to love as much as I do. My little Finley is growing up fast and is almost on the move, which means it's now time to start making our home safe for him. Did you know that every single week, at least one child under 5 years of age dies in an accident? 75% of which happen in their own home. I think this is terrifying. And this is why the team at Cheeky Rascals offer a variety of products that not only help make parents' lives easier, but are also the safest on the market, including brands like Love to Dream, Rocket, and the Fred Baby Proofing Safety Range, which has everything you need to keep your little one safe and your mind at ease. I want to support you to make your home safer for your little one and prevent them coming to any harm. So Cheeky Rascals are sponsoring this podcast and offering you 15% off Fred safety products using the code MIDWIFEPIP15.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, although that line can mean different things to different people and it can be blurry. So it's not gospel what I'm about to say, but it's definitely when these worries build up and become overwhelming, or you start to take anxious actions, right? Like avoiding places or people or activities. You know, maybe you start avoiding leaving the house because of exposure to germs from your babies, or, you know, being over controlling so you don't let anyone touch or play with your baby, things like that. Sometimes, you know, we could get those, sometimes it may be others close to us, like our friends or family members, who start to say, you know, this is not normal, or you're behaving in a different way. And then we start to look inwards and go, yeah, I am different to what I usually am. Like, this is not my normal self, right? I actually interviewed a user of our perinatal program recently, and she said something that I remember. Well, she said a lot of things that I remember strongly, and one was that she stopped seeing this friend who was pregnant and who she saw as having a wonderful pregnancy and everything was fine. And so she couldn't bear to see her because she thought that, you know, she was too anxious or too scared and, you know, didn't want to compare herself to her. And so it's these kinds of things that kind of trigger us to think, well, maybe this is getting a little bit too much. Now, I realize that that's hard because we just talked about how we're going through a really difficult phase, you know, at the societal level. So if everybody's worried about these things, then how do we differentiate? So at the same time, I'd say, look, the minute you think that this could be, this is, you know, too much to handle, or it's overwhelming, or it's not normal, like, you need to reach out and talk about it, you know, and seek help, because sometimes that line is difficult to see, you know, sometimes you cross it without even knowing.
I think, you know, speaking up, reaching out for help is just like, we need to shout that from the rooftops, don't we? Because it is so, so important. Like, it can feel really lonely, it can feel really tough, but you are never on your own. There is always other people feeling the exact same way. I just wonder if you could share with us some kind of like self-help measures that perhaps people can try and implement if they are struggling with a bit of anxiety. And then when perhaps that isn't enough, and why, and when medication may be an option or the answer for an individual.
Okay, yeah. So with regards to self-help, again, that would be just like any other anxiety or anxiety in general. And one thing that I like is, and that I've seen in other places, is that you need to balance your activities, right? Imagine it's a three-legged stool, and you've got your routine activities, right? The things that you do in your day-to-day that are part of you being more comfortable, which is, you know, making dinner and, you know, washing your clothes, and, you know, like they may be dull, but you have to do them. Otherwise, you know, your house is a mess, and that creates anxiety, right? But then you've got the necessary activities, which are, you know, definitely not pleasurable, like paying the bills, or, you know, like planning for something or preparing for a project or an interview. And then you've got the pleasurable activities, which are definitely important to make a priority. So firstly, it's having that balance of those two things, but that means really, really making sure that you indulge in pleasurable activities, that you make self-care a priority, right? And now, obviously, I could name several, but, you know, Pip, if I ask you right now, like, what do you do to treat yourself? Like, you could answer that quickly, no? Like, what would you do?
So for me, it's exercise. Those endorphins are exercise. Really important. And I always think that as a new mum, I'm in this, like, gap between Mary Poppins and the Hulk. And to try and prevent me being the Hulk, and to realize that Mary Poppins isn't massively realistic, I have to widen that gap. And widening that gap is what keeps me in a healthy state and helps me be a good mum. And so for me, those self-help, those self-care measures like exercise, like eating well, you know, like doing some breath work, helps widen that gap and prevent me becoming the Hulk.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I mean, look, Mary Poppins wasn't perfect, and the Hulk does have some things going for him. So.
just
that balance, right? But yeah, I mean, you named three key ones. I mean, obviously, spending time with friends and family, and or just, you know, going for long walks, being out in nature, getting good sleep as much as possible, actually disconnecting from the news, right? Like, you know, treating that as a diet almost. But yeah, making time for pleasurable activities and really thinking, what do I like to do? Never mind, and especially as parents, never mind my kids, never mind my partner. What makes me as an individual happy? I think it's really, really important. So yeah, in that sense, I think everybody could make a list of the things that give them pleasure. So, you know, in that regard, that's something that we can all do, right? Then you asked about medication.
Yeah, sort of when we cross that line from normal to abnormal, is that when it might be an option? Or I don't know, what are your thoughts? I guess it's different for everybody, of course.
Yeah, well, I mean, there I would have to answer just as a doctor in general, and someone who works a lot in that space where psychology, psychiatry interplay as well. I mean, one which should never make their own decisions about taking medication. It's always something you should talk to an expert about. But, you know, certainly medication comes into play where the situation it's necessary when, you know, talking therapies or psychological treatments aren't helping as much as you want, or there's something more urgent. But, you know, thankfully there are guidelines out there, and, you know, your GP, your talking therapy provider would know when it's time to recommend a medication. But before then, there's a lot, you know, that you can do, certainly, right? So we talked about these self-help tips, but there's definitely a lot of other techniques that come from talking therapy, CBT and otherwise, that you can do for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a really good point, you know, that seeking help is just the most important thing to do, isn't it? You know, we don't have to do this on our own. We shouldn't be doing it on our own. Now, I know you've given us loads of tips and we've talked a lot about anxiety, but I wonder if you could finish us off with three of your top tips to managing or perhaps seeking help with perinatal anxiety.
Three top tips.
I know.
A difficult one. Look, there are before saying three top tips of my own, I do want to say that there are good resources out there, and as a researcher, I do like to recommend the ones that have actually been validated. There's even research that has looked at websites across the world, in English, by the way, but this is obviously relevant here to an English-speaking audience, that have more accurate information or more helpful information that's presented in the best way. So Mind in the UK is really good, and then Anxiety Canada has some really good information, as does PADA, PADA in New Zealand. So those are three websites with a ton of useful information that you can look to, and because there's a ton of resources and tips there. But just, you know, for your listeners now, I do think that it's important to stress on a few things. So one is definitely don't feel ashamed. You know, if you feel overwhelmed and you can't cope, it's okay, right? It's okay to feel that, and it's okay to seek help. It's okay that if you seek help, it's not working out, or at first it doesn't, you know, make anything better. That's okay too. Like, your struggles are in others. Your struggles have been experienced by others. We've said this already. Treat your mental health just like you would your physical problems. When you have a fever, you take something for that. When you have a headache, you take something for that. So, you know, when you're feeling anxious or depressed or stressed, you know, do something about it for sure. You owe it to yourself and others around you. Also, this is actually a tip that I'm borrowing from my guest on my podcast, Eva. She was really great in saying this, that don't compare yourself to others, right? Because you feel that they're coping and so should you, and you set these unrealistic expectations of yourselves. Compare to your past versions of yourself, right? Like, is this normal? Should I be feeling this, right? And then one thing to say, and this actually comes from our own space from perinatal program, just to say on this, that this is something that you can access through your NHS talking therapy IA provider. So, you know, if you talk to your GP or your talking therapist, they may recommend internet delivered solutions such as our CBT programs. But one thing that's there that I think is very useful is something around dividing your worries, which means that you acknowledge them, you list them, and you understand what's worrying you. Ask yourself the question, can you do something about this worry? And if the answer is no, then it's a hypothetical worry, right? So it's not anything that can actually happen, but it could happen. So a way of coping a coping mechanism of that is shifting your focus. So, you know, thinking about a sound or something else in the room, or a picture or something that shifts your focus onto that. You've acknowledged that the worry is there, fine. But then, you know, instead of focusing on that, focus on something else. But then there's the practical worries, which you can do something about. And so what you do there is actively problem solve. So convert it into a practical problem, which you can do something about. Let's say you're worried that you won't be ready for the delivery. Well, you know, maybe put together a list of everything you need, right? You know, the classic, the baby bag or the baby prep bag, which by the way is something that we didn't have because when I was like 3.5 weeks premature. So we had the list, we didn't have the bag. So I'll say that when my partner's water broke, I was in the, you know, outside the hospital at 2 a.m. ordering off Amazon Now, just diapers to the house, like the maniac.
Love it. Great preparation. So,
yes, super preparation. So I should follow my own advice. But no, I mean, sometimes obviously these things can catch you off guard. But the point is that you can plan ahead and problem solve. So that's, I think that's a really nice tip. And then another thing that I really like is to avoid thinking traps, right? So thinking traps are, for example, thinking, jumping to conclusions. So saying that, oh, like I'm going to, like my baby's not going to eat, you know, I'm going to be a bad parent, things like that. And then saying, okay, wait, like, you know, what evidence do you have to support this? Like every baby is different, you know, and talking yourself out of that. Or there's the worst case scenario, right? So if a doctor or a surgery calls to say, you know, can you call us back about the results? Not thinking that they're going to tell you something horrible. Maybe they just want to tell you, you know, that they screen and it's normal and everything's fine. So these things I think are also important to do. Again, this information is out there, but I think they're just, you know, I like to hone in on the tips that I think are super helpful. And then, look, I mean, I'm a bit of a data geek, so I think information can be great because it allows us to make more informed choices. So I love this book called Crib Sheet, which essentially grabs all of the research and then tells you this is what the research is, you know, on weaning or breastfeeding or, you know, sudden infant death syndrome. So SIDS, like this is what is out there. You make the decisions that you want, you know, for yourself. And that gives you a sense of control. And I think that's really valuable at a time where it can feel that nothing is in your control because everything's different. And, you know, so I think those are things that are important to call out. And then, look, I mean, just from an anxiety point of view, I have, you know, my own issues with anxiety for different things, but I always think that it's a lot, the situation's a lot worse than what you make it out to be in your head. And I've shared this before, but I get really anxious when I'm presenting or even coming to podcasts like this one, Pip. So, I mean, I was worried that I was going to say the wrong thing or come across as, you know, a fraud or that I'm lying, you know, but hopefully your listeners and
you've
yourself
been fabulous.
Are thinking, thank you. See, I needed that reassurance.
You needed no need for anxiety on here.
But yeah, so, you know, no one is immune to these things. So the reality is a lot kinder always. So those are, I think, the things that I'd say. But yeah, I mean, it's something that, you know, one could talk about for a long time. But again, it's just, you know, so, you know, talk about it, talk to whoever you feel comfortable with talking about it, support others, support yourself. And the other thing to say is you never know the knock-on effect this can have, because these tools that I'm talking about, these things that you learn, maybe they apply to perinatal anxiety today, maybe tomorrow they'll apply to your relationship or your job. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really, like, think of it as educating yourself and preparing yourself to be, you know, just to be better prepared in the future. Again, you would take a first aid course to know what to do if your child falls or chokes on something. you should, right? And no doubt you're an advocate of that. Well, you know, it's the same here. You know, these tools might, you know, maybe right now you don't know if they'll come in handy, but maybe in the future they will, right?
It comes back again, doesn't it, to not segregating our mental and our physical health. You know, we have to plan and we have to protect both of them simultaneously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, those are my three or seven or six, I don't know how many tips they were.
When you're passionate about something, it's really hard to narrow it down to three, isn't it? So do not worry. Thank you so much for coming on to chat to me today. And I'm sure that listening to I guess some of the normalizing conversation, but also some of the realization that there is help out there and to speak up and to not compare and to treat yourself with the kindness and compassion that you would your friend or your family member when it comes to perinatal anxiety is so important. So I know you thanked me at the beginning for the profession and for the midwives, but thank you for the work that you're doing to support perinatal mental health, because it is so important. And really, we are, I think, scratching the surface and only just starting to lift the lid on a little bit of that taboo. There's still a hell of a lot more work to be done. So thank you for championing that. It's really important.
No, it's a pleasure. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. We're just getting started. So that's why, you know, I think I feel lucky to be in a profession where there's still so much we can do, so much headway and so many people we can help. So thanks to you as well for having this podcast and talking about it and talking to so many people and making people more aware and helping so many people along the way. So thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, Pip.
Oh, pleasure. Lovely to chat to you. And that's it for another episode. I hope you enjoyed listening. Remember, you can use your exclusive discount code podcast15 on all my online courses. And why not check out my free mini course while you're there too? If you enjoyed listening to this episode, remember to hit subscribe so you're the first to hear about all the upcoming chats too. And I'd be immensely grateful if you could take a couple of minutes to leave me a quick podcast review too. I look forward to speaking to you again very soon.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.